Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I am your host, Susan Laris and Danz. Coming off a brief hiatus, and I first at the beginning want to thank people for their support and condolences during the recent transition of my father. And this event, not only being a major life event for me, it also had a profound spiritual impact on me, as well as the way that so many people reached out to me, because we truly are a family listening. And I believe today's guest is going to bring forward some of these lessons in a very powerful way about how we choose to live. And I have to feel that my experience of recent weeks dealing with my father's transition, who was almost 91 years old and lived a very full life, but no matter when that moment of transition occurs, and let me tell you, I did witness his transition. I was there, and the circumstances that occurred to allow me to be there were pretty amazing in themselves, pretty miraculous that I was nudged to get out there, get on a plane as fast as I could, and literally arrived at his bedside within an hour of his passing. So I am coming to you today from a place of, I suppose I should say, authenticity, because today we do have a guest, Robert Rabin, who is known for his teaching and writing about that very topic. I am very honored to have Robert on as a guest, as one of our series of well-known speakers who are coming to this program and sharing with what I know is a very diverse and very, I don't know how to put it, natural upfront audience. We are just regular people coming together for a conversation, and I know that this one is going to be powerful. Robert, his most recent book, and he has written several, is The Five Principles of Authentic Living. And this is not only a book, it is a practice, and it is a something that he demonstrates daily, and he also speaks to groups about this topic. Robert has had a fascinating path, one that has taken him throughout the world. He is not only a groundbreaking speaker and self-awareness teacher, he has been a leadership advisor. In fact, I was reading about an event he did near where I grew up, as a matter of fact, at the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs. His blog is just fascinating, filled with interesting accounts, and I can't remember if that was in his book or his blog, but he'll tell us in a minute. And he has also been involved with several organizations involved in world enlightenment and involved in enlightened leadership. He was involved in radical stages, real-time speaking, and then, of course, his latest is the Authenticity Accelerator. Something that Robert has blogged about recently is his very recent diagnosis of stage 4 lung cancer. So, and I know that's something that we'll be talking about today, and I do hope that people listening today, that we do have some people who may have, may be dealing with a challenge of their own, and I think it will be helpful for us all to talk through how we live authentically with challenges such as that. The call-in number for today's show is 310-807 5104. If we have some time a little bit later in our conversation, we may be taking a call or two. We also have an open chat room today where people can share their thoughts and comments. And if there are questions from the chat, I can convey those to Robert. So now, without further delay, I'm going to bring on Robert Rabin. Welcome, Robert, to the Frontier Beyond Fear.
Susan, thank you. I've been so enjoying your speaking that I forgot I have to speak, so I'll just change gears.
Well, thank you. And actually, I take that as a compliment since
it is.
I know one of your paths is teaching authentic speaking. So I really appreciate that. But if ever I have spoken from the heart, today would be it. You know, when we encounter those major issues in life like I have in the last few weeks, and I know you have as well in your own way, it brings us to our authentic selves, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think so. It certainly can. You know, if we look at what is the authentic self, for me, it's not a fixed image or identity. For me, the authentic self is really a process. It's really an orientation to living. And Susan, I remember when you and I were speaking a couple days ago in our pre-interview, and you asked me something like, what is my essential message of authenticity? And I said, it's really me. It's me showing up in any given moment with a blank canvas on the inside and a blank canvas on the outside. In other words, you know, the authentic self is really one that we create through access to that place, that inner place of creative and expressive power, rather than a fixed image or a belief or a concept. And so when we get triggered by something really powerful in life that causes us to wake up a little bit or a lot, and the waking up means we start moving through and beneath those levels of conditioning, then I think that's exactly right. We end up in that place of authenticity, which is where we start creating who we are through engagement with the moment.
Yeah.
In a very vulnerable and real way.
I have to say that whenever I'm talking on the radio like this, on the internet radio, authenticity, I suppose it is a process, because isn't it true? I think there was something that you wrote. In fact, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. I have to be careful not to say, isn't it true? I am curious about your opinion about when you're speaking in a place such as this. There's always, we always are aware. I mean, I guess when you're not aware that anyone's listening, it's even easier, because then you're really, really natural. There's a certain, I don't know how to explain it. It is a challenge, I suppose, in being yourself as much as you possibly can be, and yet still knowing that there are people listening. And that's something I'd be curious what you would say about
that. That's a very big theme in the work that I do. You mentioned before briefly about authentic public speaking. I had a company called Real Time Speaking just before I created the Authenticity Accelerator. And in that work, in which I taught authentic self-expression and public speaking as I do now, but under the fourth principle of the five principles to speak truthfully, we always run up against that. We run up against people suppressing themselves for fear of the judgment of others. And the judgment could be positive or negative. It really often doesn't matter. Some people suppress themselves in order to not be seen as being brilliant and charismatic and powerful. So it isn't just that we hide from the negative criticism, we often hide from the positive criticism, because then we'll have to own up to how great we are. It's both of those. The way I work with it is to simply point out what seems to be self-evident truth, which is every single person is always going to have an opinion about anything. And if it's your speaking or my speaking, then they're going to have an opinion about that. It isn't so much that they're going to have an opinion. It's whether or not we elevate their opinion above ours. If we can keep everyone's opinion at the same level, then we've really neutralized the way other people's opinions, positive or negative, can interfere in our authentic self-expression, because we simply say thank you for your opinion. The real key in this is to realize also that our expression is just another opinion. So when I'm expressing myself, I'm never trying to be right. I'm just trying to be real. And because I'm not trying to be right, because I realize my expression is just another opinion, whenever it meets anyone else's opinion, it's all at the same playing field. So it's always thank you for your opinion.
Yeah.
Because if you're not trying to be right and you're not afraid of being wrong, then how could someone's opinion interfere in your authenticity? You would just say thank you for your opinion.
What about when we judge ourselves, our own opinion, when we set up expectations?
That's right. But it's the same dynamic, isn't it? We have that expectation is something we have elevated above what's actually happening. So we work with it in the same way. Whether we have the interior judge or the exterior judge, the principle is the same.
Yes. Well, I know that this is actually helpful for some people listening, because nowadays with Blog Talk Radio and all these different ways of communicating that didn't used to be available to, quote, you know, I don't know who is a regular person. We're all regular people, but I mean, many of us have our paths of we're teaching things or starting down a path or whatever. I know a number of people who listen to this show, Robert, who are really just venturing out into speaking in such a way. And now that we have these tools that are out there which allow you to speak and to be heard, it's an interesting new challenge. And I appreciate that, you know, we just have to do it. I mean, I think that's the most important thing is don't judge yourself. Actually, I suppose even if you realize you're judging yourself, don't even judge that. It becomes somewhat circular. And just let it be.
That's right. I think it's as simple as that. Don't resist it or oppose it. Just understand that in terms of authentic self-expression, we're always going to meet the opinions of others, and that includes the opinions of others that have settled in our own minds as the interior judge. And all we have to do is not elevate anyone above the other, which we tend to do because we often live in that hierarchical world where we'll put someone, for example, who maybe makes more money than we do or has a more advanced degree than we do. Maybe they have a PhD in something. We tend to elevate people above us in a lot of different ways. We live very vertically, very hierarchically. If we can just turn that axis of relationship over so it becomes horizontal, then we can leave everyone be where they are. We can leave the PhDs and the multi-billionaires or, you know, however it is we organize it so that people are above us in terms of their opinion. And then there's no one who's above and there's no one who's below. There's just everyone expressing themselves.
Yes.
And that makes a really big difference. You know, as long as, again, and this is the key to it, we're not trying to be right. It's one thing to have all of these new mediums to express ourselves. Social media, for example, Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and blogs and Blog Talk Radio, we've got any number of outlets to express ourselves. But we also want to be sure that within our self-expression, we're not trying to be right, because that, to me, is the killer. If we can just come to it saying this is our true expression without any defense, then we've got a whole different ballgame going. We're really then authentically self-expressing.
Yes. And sometimes it seems we're even tricked into being more authentic. I had an experience, it was some time ago, where I had quite a well-known speaker. And, you know, I truly have been blessed and supported by people around me, bringing these people to me like yourself, who I think are just wonderful. But of course, then I feel like, okay, you know, I need to be take this to the next level. And some time ago, I realized that about this show, because I was attracting people who, you know, were speaking very broadly in the spiritual community. And so what happened? The very first one that I had on, and I don't necessarily have to say who it was, I had a horrible technical glitch, one that hadn't occurred, and we couldn't connect, and he got disconnected. And the funny thing was, is that when I first got him on, it was almost like a phone conversation. I mean, it was just like I was so relieved that I had rescued him from the abyss of technical issues, that I could not have been more myself in that moment. There were no pretensions. There was none of this, oh, I'm on, you know, internet radar, nothing. It was just relief. And you know what it did is it launched. We then had a conversation about the whole experience and how, you know, what lessons it had and, you know, things that happened in the moment. And even as I talk about it now, I can feel that coming back, that that honesty that, okay, this happened, and we're just going to, you know, move through that moment.
Yes, exactly. Tricked now into authenticity by the failure of technology. There you go. Well, what happened is as I listened to you, Susan, what happened is they just collapsed the hierarchy. And instead of having this person appear in some way above you, it was just another person with another point of view, as you have. Now, you know, it doesn't mean that some people don't have a more useful or informed point of view, but in terms of the collapse of our authentic self-expression, we don't need to ever do that. You know, the challenge, of course, is to speak intelligently and with an eye toward the audience and to speak for effect, all of those things. There's a lot of elements in speaking authentically, but the one that we're talking about really is the killer. It's where we'll just stop speaking because we elevate someone else above us. And if we don't do that, we're pretty much good to go. We can certainly then deal with all the other things in a much easier way.
Well, and you know, it is true that at that point in the conversation, technology put us on equal footing, and you know, I think we were both happy that it was working. And, you know, there's also a certain what I love about talking with all people is there really isn't this hierarchy. It's in our minds. Because
that's right.
I don't care if the most famous person in the world, and I'm not sure, well, it's pretty hard to say who that is, but let's just suppose they were on the show. It's still a regular person, and also usually those people have great compassion for you. It's a two-way street. Not only do I want it to be a good experience for that person, whoever it is, but they want it to be a good experience for me. And if something goes awry, their compassion comes through, and we're just connecting as human beings. We're not in a hierarchy. Now, I want to give you the opportunity. We kind of launched right into this, and that often happens on this show, but I want to give us an opportunity to rewind a little bit so that you can tell us a little bit about how you came to this path. I know you've had a fascinating journey, and I would like you to share a little bit about your own path and how you came to this work.
Well, that's always the dreaded question for me because I relate less and less to my past and to how I got here, only because as I get older, there's so much past to recall, and I really don't. And I don't know that anything specifically brought me to where I am. I just kind of know where I am. But even that continually changes the more present I am moment to moment. So, you know, I could say in a very broad brush, Susan, that I was a child of the 60s and took an interest in Zen meditation and Carlos Castaneda and LSD and all of those things. Ended up in India searching for questions to who am I and so on. Found a meditation teacher with whom I lived for 10 years. And after he passed, I went on my way and started doing what you would call my work, which, while it had a lot of different looks to it, there was a thread of authenticity, you know, being real, speaking in a real manner, working in a real manner. And
yeah.
Maybe the authenticity took the place of words like self-realization and words that were more prevalent in the 60s. But there was always the interest, even from a younger age, from preteen when I was 11, there was just an interest in these seminal questions that we sometimes ask, you know, who am I and what is my purpose and what is real and what's the nature of the mind? And those questions, I think, are really a precursor to an authentic life. I think how we answer those is our authenticity.
Yeah.
So I've just been engaged in those questions all my life and to this very day.
I'm curious, how do you relate when, on the spiritual path that, well, again, it's so hard to label a spiritual path, as you say, but in my spiritual journey, I've encountered various teachers and various people who are working with teachers. And I was wondering if you could talk about this concept of a guru or a teacher, or and how, during your journey, what have you learned about relating to such people? I know we've talked about collapsing the hierarchy, but given that you were with this person for a long time,
yes.
I'm really curious what you would say about how, and again, each person relates in a different way,
yeah.
just what you would say about relating
yeah.
to a teacher of that nature.
That was my easy out is I was with my teacher before I discovered the hierarchy. No, I'm teasing. That's a very profound question, and I actually want to reflect for a moment.
Yes.
I want to just reflect for a moment.
And that is perfectly acceptable. And
yeah.
I will say that one of the reasons I asked it is because I have heard more than once people say the age of the guru is past. What does that mean? You know, where do we, you know, and how do we then relate to these people that we admire?
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay to admire and welcome the wisdom of someone, but I'm just, again, I'll give you an opportunity to think about
Here's what I'll say in this moment. First of all, I don't know what it means when they say the age of the guru is past. I think I would agree when they say the age of dinosaurs is past, but I can't comment because I really don't know what that means. A guru or a teacher, but let's take a guru. What guru actually means from the Sanskrit, it's two syllables, gu and ru, and it means the light that dispels the darkness.
Uh-huh.
So it's not really referring to a person. A guru, in the tradition and in the context in which it comes to us, is actually a principle. And that principle can exist as within an individual as a certain capacity, but it can also become, but it also can be a function of life itself. When I was recently diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, this body, and you know, has become my new guru in the sense that it's teaching me things that I hadn't learned before. So
yeah.
that principle of the light that dispels the darkness is alive, in this body for me now, because in terms of what I'm learning. So I think it's important to understand what the guru actually is from the tradition that it comes to us. That's one thing. So if we take it as a principle, the light that dispels the darkness, then we needn't engage with someone who for us is the embodiment of that, but suppressing our own self-expression. But there is a little bit of a game here, isn't there? Because we apprentice to a teacher to learn what he or she knows, or to what he or she can help us find within ourselves. Now, the interesting thing about, I'll just use my teacher as an example. I've only had that one guru, so I can only have that as my experience. His fundamental message was so supremely self-empowering. His message was, God dwells within you as you. Therefore, meditate on your own self. So if you get around a person whose message is, you're it, you're one with that supreme creative consciousness, there really isn't any room for that kind of self-suppression or domination that can sometimes happen with a teacher who's less clear about what they're doing. So that's been my experience. My experience of my guru was that the relationship facilitated, empowered, enabled, catalyzed, energized my own authentic self. And
so maybe
I never had the experience with him over 10 plus years that the relationship inhibited that. So I can only speak to my experience, and that's what I would say. And so even though you could say that in his ashram and in the relationship with him, certainly, you know, he had a place above me, if you will, in a certain hierarchy, in that if you wanted to stay in his ashram, you had to follow the rules. Simple
yeah.
as that. But you have to follow the rules if you do anything, really. You know, wherever we go, whatever we do, on Blog Talk Radio, there are certain, you know, certain rules that you've got to abide by, or you'll be knocked off the air, I think. You know, it isn't, are there rules? It's, do those rules, do those dynamics, what do they facilitate? Do they facilitate keeping you bound and suppressed, or do they not? My experience of my relationship with my teacher is that it was an extraordinary catalyst for authenticity, for the realization of the thing in me that I could see in him more easily in the beginning.
You know, I think that what you're expressing here is you really came into the presence of a true enlightened teacher, someone who did not seek to disempower you, even though there were rules. And, you know, I could see, I know that you've done a lot with leadership training
mm-hmm.
as well, how this can generalize to leadership in general, is that
yeah.
even though there are rules of engagement, so to speak, a true leader or way shower has a balance, doesn't disempower those who are listening, I guess, is what you're saying. And maybe when people say, and I have heard it said more than one, that the age of the guru is past, it's not so much what they're saying there. It's more the age of giving up your empowerment to listen to someone who may be disempowering you. That's really what's past, is that people are being shown they are more easily discerning those leaders who seek to bring out the best in them. You know, it's not just about the leader, it's
mm-hmm.
about the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I feel that
mm-hmm.
you're saying. And I feel that, you know, just based on what you've described, you were in the presence of someone who truly was doing that, who was
mm-hmm.
guru by every sense of the word as you defined it.
Yes, but I also know people who became very disillusioned and disappointed. And there are people who actually would speak very differently than I am about the same person.
So it's
hard to generalize, and I think that we also have to put some responsibility and credit on, let's say, the student or
yeah.
in that relationship. I think a lot of my perception of my teacher and of that the guru-disciple relationship has to do with how I saw it. And what I did, and what I was there to accomplish, and my level of sincerity. Because my seeing is just that. It's my opinion. There are people who have different opinions. And as for the other thing you're saying, it's hard for me to hold such generalizations. One of the things that I like to emphasize in my work, which of course then means my life, because my life and my work
yeah.
are the same, is to keep things personal and specific. When I coach people, or in workshops when I answer questions, and people come with a generalized question, an adult version of why is the sky blue, which, you know, if you've ever had children or been around kids, you'll get that. And that's, and you realize that you can never truly answer the child because it's not a sincere, personal, specific question. It's a kind of random, you know, why is the sky blue? Okay, well, then why is that? Why is that? And the real push that I can, that I think we can get in our own transformation is if we keep things personal and specific. In other words, make it about what's happening in your life, not a generalization, which immediately goes into the world of concepts, doesn't it? So you'll notice that I answered your question in a very specific and personal way.
Yes.
I didn't talk about the general, I didn't answer your question in the way that it was asked. It was asked in a general way,
yes.
And I answered, well, all I can do is tell you about my experience with my teacher, personal and specific.
Right.
And that's how I answered it.
And actually, that's really a powerful lesson in itself because, you know, one of the things you and I talked about a little bit before the show is I recently had an experience. You know, after my father's transition, I found myself with family who came from a diversity of spiritual
mm-hmm.
backgrounds. And, you know,
yeah.
my own journey came out of evangelical Christianity, which, you know, has been quite a journey for me and my personal experience. And I think more and more, it's important that you emphasize this because more and more it seems I'm being reminded that it's all about one's personal experience
mm-hmm.
of God or however you label that. Even some people don't have a personal experience of God. They
mm-hmm.
they choose not to think about there being a God, you know, and or however you want to label that concept. And they find it in other ways, you know, they have a rich experience in some other way or, you know, or whatever you're going through. At times it may not feel like such a rich experience. I mean, I've had times in my life which were truly anguished, you know, in my spiritual journey
yeah.
where I was disconnected. And yet those times led me to more enlightenment, I guess, although I don't try to put myself up on a pedestal saying, you know, who's enlightened, who's not. We're all enlightened. It's all in the moment, isn't it? And that whole process of revealing what is true to us. And maybe that's another thing I'm curious. Why don't, can you talk a little bit about truth and what is truth? What is, and in a personal
mm-hmm.
way?
Mm. There's two ways we can spell truth. We can spell it with a capital T, and we can spell it with a lowercase t. I only know the lowercase truth. I don't know the capital T truth. Those are things that people hold to with a sense of absolute. This is the absolute truth. It's the allure of fundamentalism. So, but fundamentalism in any stripe, really, we can be fundamentalist
yes.
Christians, we can be fundamentalists, non-dualists, you know, we can take the teachings of Vedanta and become fundamentalists there.
Yes.
In other words, this is the absolute truth. And in my journey, I have realized that the absolute truth, or truth with a capital T, as in this is it, and anything that isn't this is not true, that really is the play of the mind. And that truth with a capital T and the absolute truth versus the relative truth are categories of the mind also. And the more we learn to live outside the thought stream or the mind and the thoughts, the more we can see that for ourselves, which is why, again, I emphasize personal and specific as opposed to general and abstract. Because if we move into the abstraction, for example, the age of the guru is dead. Well, that's such a concept that there's really nothing we can do about it, because I don't want to live in a conceptual world. Authenticity for me, if anything, points to the world as it is, not representational. So I don't like to live in the conceptual world of anything. So that's one thing. It's important to realize that truth with a capital T, proceed with caution. Now, it's difficult to give that up, Susan, because it gives us such a sense of security and safety and certainty. If we can read a scripture or refer to some teacher's dogma or anything with a sense of absolutism, look at how much of the paradox of life we've dissolved. This is the way it is. But the more we get into life, the more we realize, wow, it's really not any one way. It's this magical mystery tour. So then we come to truth with the lowercase t, which I think is very important, because it then brings out the integrity with which one can live. And for me, the lowercase t truth is, be real. Tell me the truth of your experience. Tell me the truth of who you are in this moment, with no hesitation and no hiding and no pretense.
Yes.
But the truth of who we are is really like the weather report. Tell me the truth of who you are now. And then tell me the truth of who you are now. And so truth-telling with a lowercase t is simply an honest and transparent and vulnerable, defenseless presentation of what is meaningful, what is purposeful, what is true for you in this moment. So we're really, it's the truth with a lowercase t is where our wholeness and our integrity is. It's also where the inner and the outer can come together. A lot of people are afraid of the truth of who they are. They might say, well, if I speak up in the workplace, I'll get fired. If I speak up with my spouse or my partner, he or she will leave. If I tell the truth of who I am, something bad will happen. That's why telling the truth is so important, because we've got to overcome the inhibition that if I tell the truth of who I am, something bad will happen. That truth is really important to tell.
Well, and the fascinating thing is sometimes something bad does happen. I mean, I don't want to say that should frighten you from being authentic, but I certainly have had experience. Of course, what is something bad? I mean,
well, I was about to break in and say, what is that?
Something bad? That thing that we may fear can occur sometimes. And actually, I've had that personally happen to me where it seems my journey has been one of becoming more and more honest and asking the tough questions. And, even within the corporate structure, I became too direct. And actually, it hurt me. It really did. But did it hurt me? Because if not for it, quote, hurting me, I would not be here doing this right now. So,
but I think,
it really
Susan,
didn't hurt me.
Well, I do think it's important to stop there for a second and really look at the framing.
Yes.
Something bad did happen, or I got hurt. I wouldn't presume to interfere in how you're recalling your experience. But from my point of view, we've got to start with, let's prioritize things in life. Let's start with what's really important. For me, it's authenticity above all else. It's telling the truth. Because when I stop telling the truth, when I stop living authentically, my experience of being alive is so withered and so suppressed and so closed that it's not even living. So, I've got to start with authenticity, telling the truth, being unafraid of who I am, is really where life can flow into us and where we can be alive. So anything that I may have to let go of in order to have a more authentic life, I'm happy to do, and I don't see that as being bad or having been hurt.
Right, and even I'm saying that I come to see that more and more too, that what may immediately feel painful, right?
Yes.
I mean, for me, without, and this has happened to me in other ways too, where, you know, I asked the wrong question, or the quote
yes.
wrong question, let's be clear, you know, that was just too direct,
mm-hmm.
like within evangelical Christianity, you know, I was asking, questioning
mm-hmm.
sacred things or whatever. And that can then lead to someone else shunning you in some way, or
that's right.
judging you. And
yeah.
it does hurt a little bit. I mean, it feels emotionally...
yeah.
or in the workplace, if we choose that there are certain things that we value and we're not willing to compromise, or, you know, in
mm-hmm.
terms of depending on where we're involved, then it can hurt in the moment. It does. And sometimes when I look back on that, it still kind of hurts, some of these experiences. But I do see where you're coming from, that
mm-hmm.
That it really... is bringing us to who we truly are, that even though it did hurt in the moment, and sometimes when we look back, it still sears, whatever the thing is, it's bringing us to who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that more and more, too.
Yes. Well, certainly, Susan, there is the pain, because we may have to let go of certain people, certain situations. There's a sense of loss. That can
yeah.
often be painful. There's the loss
yeah.
of a self-image or of a self-identity. You know, if we've seen ourselves as an evangelical Christian for many years and suddenly we start asking questions and shake the foundation of that self-image, you know, those can certainly be painful processes of letting go, absolutely.
Yeah.
But we're letting go of the false, because... why in the end would we want to be around people with whom we couldn't express who we really are? And why would we want to work in a place where we couldn't express who we really are?
Right.
And I think just what you touched on about the evangelicals and asking questions, that goes back to the capital T, lowercase t.
Yes.
So they're coming from a capital T place. You're coming from a lowercase t. You know, truth as in, well, I have some questions, and let me explore this in a personal way. And they collide. They often
yes.
do.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I find that I kind of chuckle at myself. It seems like I always question, quote, sacred things. And no matter where I go, you know, one of the things I have questioned, even though I've had guests on, because I see nuances, and I think we all do this to some degree. It's not just black and white. Like the law of attraction, for example, now that I'm involved in a different group of people, I think sometimes we place concepts like that so high. To me, it's just like the dogma from the Bible. You know, see, I can
yeah.
see, I map it back to, hey, you know, it's yet another thing that's been substituted. And, you know, aren't there nuances, you know, and not to make this too personal, but one thing I think about is like your journey, for example, right now, reading your blog and what you're going through with your stage 4 cancer. When I look at that from the outside looking in, my personal perspective of reading about what you're going through, what I see is this man... you're having your personal journey, but there's a reason that it's happening in a way-showing kind of way, too, that all the people who are helping, you are helping through the way that you're going through this journey. And so sometimes when the law of attraction is being harsh, you know, this is, again, my questioning a sacred thing, it only looks at, did we attract that? You know, what did we do to attract that? And we become focused on that. And I'm not saying that's a healthy way necessarily to view it. But I have known and I have seen this in Christianity, too. It comes up there where, oh, you weren't praying hard enough. I have a friend who became quite sick. Everyone around her told her she didn't have enough faith. She wasn't praying enough. This was in evangelical Christianity. And I know this is a pretty deep thing to ask you right now, but as you go through this journey, I mean, how are you reflecting upon all of this? Could you share that with us for those out there who are also going through challenges, who have great faith or feel that they do in their own way, and we have diverse listeners, have different types of faith. how can you reflect upon your current journey with cancer?
Susan, just tell me a little bit. You asked to comment on all of this, but are you talking about...
Big question.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the question is. Are you asking...
The question is, I guess it's a... When something... How do you view the challenge that you're facing right now? Do you view it as a challenge? I think that you can help people who are walking through challenges. Now, in asking the question, I led up to it with a big, my own question, my own authenticity, where it is something I'm really working with right now, the whole concept of the law of attraction and sometimes a cut and dry explanation of, you know, when we encounter a challenge, is it even a challenge? I mean, I guess that would be the question, too. Are you even viewing it as a challenge? How are you walking through this experience in the moment?
Well, it's changed everything.
Yes.
In my life. In some cases, it's just deepened it. It's made things maybe more immediate, more urgent, more present. The challenge, I'm not sure it's a challenge, it's another, you know, it's another thing that life brings, another element, you might say challenge, to deal with. So I'm dealing with it at the level of, well, I certainly do want to reverse this condition and keep living.
Yeah.
I would like to do that.
Yes.
But I'm also quite resolved for it to go the other way. Because, as I mentioned to someone who said, Robert, you know, you can do it. You can triumph over cancer and be victorious. I said, that may be, but all I'm going to do is delay the inevitable, which is I'm still going to die, right? So
yeah.
So it isn't the fight to not die from cancer. It's,
yeah.
Someone else sent me a beautiful little reminder and said, Robert, cancer is the cure. So just for a minute, let's go from cancer is the disease to cancer is the cure. What an interesting flip for the mind that is.
Wow.
And you realize that, well, what is cancer going to cure? Well, for me, cancer is curing a lot of ways in which I've been not mindful and attentive to how I've treated my body for 40 years.
Yeah.
I've been very rough on it. I've really, you know, ridden it to death. And now I'm going, okay, you know, a lot of those abuses are showing up perhaps as cancer. So in this sense, it's a good way to make changes in my lifestyle that are just overall intelligent changes to support wellness is one thing.
Yeah.
The, you know, the other thing is just accepting what the diagnosis and the post-diagnosis lifestyle is bringing me, which I do write a lot about in the blog, and there are insights and epiphanies and realizations that just seem to come, but I don't really know if they're the gift of cancer or if cancer is just an element in a series of synchronistic collisions where it's time for me to really deepen my whole spiritual understanding of life. For example, in a recent Reiki session I had with my sister, my teacher, who passed away in 1982, came into the room, sat down, and talked to my sister and said, tell him the reason he has cancer is because he got stuck in his work and he needed to raise his work to a different level. And because his work and, you know, because he and his work are the same, he really needs to raise his level of being to another level. And when he does that, the cancer will go. So there's a whole other take on why I have cancer and what I can do about it. So the challenge of cancer is the challenge really of anything, which is how are we going to respond and from where are we going to respond? So when a doctor who's part of the initial diagnostic team said, Robert, statistically, you have 6 months to live.
Oh, wow.
So he said, no matter, even if you do chemotherapy, you might get another month, but basically go home and you've got a few months left to live.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't believe that. I don't
you
believe
didn't
that.
That. Yeah.
I don't believe that is the reality.
Yes.
I believe that's his reality. My reality will be created in large part by how I respond and from where I respond. So certainly I've made massive changes to my lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, breakfast this morning was 16 ounces of green leafy vegetable juice, organic green leafy vegetable juice. Lunch will be a fruit smoothie. You know, during the course of the day, I'll take 50 different pills and supplements. So I've made all of those changes to respond to the challenge of having cancer and my desire to be cancer-free and keep living. But I don't go anywhere near the idea that I created it, I've got it, as some kind of a failure. I just don't work with that principle.
That's so important. I'm glad that you expressed that because, and again, it's each person's view, but I feel that sometimes when we go through challenges that we simplify them by viewing it that way. And I guess when I look from the outside, and again, I'm just coming to your work, Robert. I'm just getting to know who you are. And wow, I mean, I was just blown away by the open house that you have out there in your blog right now and how you're bringing people into this experience with you.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can see, and again, this is my perception as someone just looking in, is wow. Look at how he's bringing people with him into this experience and, you know, even talking about things like what does it mean to be willing to be yourself? I mean, really profound questions and how you're coming to certain realizations about your own path and you're bringing everyone along with you. And, you know, I do... I don't think I mentioned your website, and I should probably mention it for those of you out there, and it's on the page, authenticityaccelerator.com.
Yes.
For people who are going through their own, there are many forms of cancer in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just really saw how, I mean, I guess to use the word, you're being a guru in a way. You are radiating that light.
Thank you.
And it moved me so much. I told you at the beginning of this show, I had to change the title of the show.
It
was too flat for you. And I'm not saying this to lavish praise on you or put you up on a pedestal or any of that.
Mm.
It's that you are bringing people through this experience with you. And I think we always want to ask the why. Why did it happen? Why did it happen? And that's when people tend to oversimplify. Like in the evangelical community, they may have said, oh, well, you didn't pray enough, although
that's
they might also say, oh, it's God's will. Well, the fascinating thing that I see is that if we look at God as all of us together, what if in a way this experience is all of us walking this path with you?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And that's part of it too, and that the whys are so hard to figure out. There are probably many whys.
I made friends, Susan, a long time ago.
Yeah.
With three words.
Yeah.
That have served me quite well. It has kept me from falling into the capital T truth, which I just don't trust. I think it's a way out of the paradox of living. The three words that I've made my friends are, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know why I have cancer. My teacher came and said one thing. I've got doctors who said another. I've got any number of people who say this, that, and the other thing. And it's everyone has an opinion. So it does, and even if I were to know why, if I could know that absolutely, what does that do now? It's still, to me, the question is, what are you going to do now? I never asked, why do I have this? which is very odd because it usually is the first question that people think I would have asked, or people want to know, well, why did you get this? And I go, I don't know. I've never asked that question.
Wow. And that's powerful because what you're saying is for you, that question's not relevant. Is that true?
It's
or
not,
that it doesn't
not,
really matter?
It's not as important as other questions. And one of the
yeah.
things that's happened in my life is I realize, you know, the realization of how we want to make each moment momentous. We don't want to let the moments slip by filled with mediocrity and irrelevant things. And so what I feel like I'm doing is asking the important questions for me in the here
yeah.
and now. And why I have this just isn't a question that's come up as being particularly important because I can't know for sure.
Yes.
I can't know for sure. And what I can do is look at, well, what can I do now? And so my life is filled with doing things in answer to, Robert, what can you do now to become cancer-free and keep living? Well,
yes.
I'm doing all those things. Why do I have it? To me, isn't a question I can answer with any certainty or even any usefulness because I know that I can't know for sure.
Do you think that kind of question really isn't in the moment, that it really has more to do with the past than the present moment? Is it really more of the moment to just deal with the situation now? Don't worry about the whys. In fact, worry, there's a big term. I mean, you talk about worry
yeah.
in your book. And, you know, how do you stay free of that worry path?
Well, worry, you know, anxiety to me is a preview of coming attractions that
uh-huh.
we play in the theater of our mind.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I were to have listened to that oncologist who said, Robert, you've got 6 months to live, and that seed entered my brain as truth, then the coming attractions of my life are going to be played out in I only have 6 months to live. And that was that
right.
that diagnosis was 2 months ago. So now I only have 4 months left.
Yeah.
So
and
to
you
me,
heard
worry
even
and anxiety,
when you said that, I reacted like, wow, you know, because it's like we all dance with those fears, don't we? I mean,
yeah.
a little bit. We
well,
dance
I think,
with them and keep them at bay.
We dance with the projections of our mind.
Yes.
As worry and anxiety, which to me is that's what it is. It's the preview of coming attractions as told by our mind. And so, you know, getting present, which is to get into a state of awareness in which we're not defined or determined by those thoughts, changes the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, all I can do is say, well, that question never really came up. It's like, okay, I have it. What do I do?
Yes.
And I don't even have conversations with people about why, because it irritates me.
Yes.
And it puts me in a bad mood.
I know.
What I meant was I don't have any time for conceptual living.
Right.
I don't have any time
right.
for speculation and, you know, people's minds just going on and on and on forever. It's like you can't know for certain. What does it matter? And in the meantime, I could be focusing on doing something about it.
Exactly. And I mean, I knew that you weren't upset with me. I just feel like, you know, I know that I have a tendency to just, I say whatever at the top of my head. I really, when I'm talking with someone, I'm really genuinely curious, you know, how you're
sure.
dealing with this. And there's so
yeah.
many things that, you know, different people I've known who've gone through this. I have actually lost people, although I have to say that, you know, the recent experience I had coming from witnessing my father's transition, not
mm-hmm.
necessarily to focus on that. However, I will say that so much of the conversation around things like cancer and other serious illnesses have to do with our fear of death. And I will say that I will never forget what I witnessed. And, you know, now I'm going to get emotional. It was the most powerful thing I've witnessed in a long time. I mean, it will probably go down as one of the most powerful things in my life, mm-hmm. was the peace of that moment that I saw with someone who we tended to worry that he would be afraid in that moment.
Yes.
Because he had a tendency to sometimes, I mean, wonderful man, but just like all of us, how do we know, you know,
mm-hmm.
how, what that moment's going to be like? How do you know mm-hmm. when you're present for that moment? And it was an amazing thing. You know, I don't know if I want to go too deeply into it, just that I know that he saw something
mm-hmm.
at the end. And, you know, more and more, it's as if the veil is being lifted from some of that.
Mm.
Look at what happened with Steve Jobs. I mean,
mm-hmm.
how many of us are hearing that? Oh, wow, oh, wow, oh,
yeah.
wow.
And that was beautiful.
You know, one of the things that I wrote about on my Facebook page was that I saw that, oh, wow, in a very gentle way in my
mm-hmm.
father's eyes. And in that, it healed everybody in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Each of us was coming from a different belief system, and we all saw this and were like, wow.
Mm.
I mean, it really was. And just, I don't know how to explain it. So,
yeah.
you know, wherever your
yeah.
path, I mean, our all of our paths are going to take us to that moment, whenever
right.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me. It helped my mother, who's in her 80s and feels,
mm-hmm.
you know, closer to that moment. So, anyway, sorry for launching into this, but
no, it's very beautiful.
That's
very beautiful.
Powerful.
In listening to you speak about it, I can't help but wonder what would your father have lived like had he had that experience at 35 and came back to life, but having
yes.
had that experience of what he saw. And I think that my diagnosis was a little bit like that. It was a
yes.
little bit like going right to the, oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow.
Yes.
But now here I am still living. But
yes.
the, oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow is every day.
Yes.
So it's changed my living. Not that I didn't have those kinds of experiences along the way through meditation and just on my spiritual journey, but there's just something about this that is much more profound and taken everything to a different level, I suppose. And
yes.
that's really what it is. It was like there's this, you know, oh, wow, there's a kind of whatever it is your father may have seen. There's something that we see, and then we live from that seeing, and it's totally different.
And
it's
you
totally
know, it
different.
Wasn't. It wasn't just a seeing, you know, it wasn't like people talk about, you know, there's this huge flash of recognition or something. It wasn't like that. It was intrigue. It was like,
mm-hmm.
whoa, what's that? I mean, that if I were to care, and he did open his eyes at the very last minute. They had been closed for hours and hours and pretty much unresponsive. And then in the last moment, he did open his eyes. He saw us. He was surrounded by family members. We were showering him with love in every possible way. I mean, we were just, I mean, and we had an amazing hospice worker there who was just, she was from Indonesia. I mean, it was even a multicultural experience. And she was assisting him in ways, I mean, she was a light worker. And anyway, it wasn't even so much even the content of what was it. It was that peace. It was that acceptance. It was that it's okay. I don't know. Again, I'll get emotional. And I know we're heading towards the end of, we're actually after the end of the first hour. I did get a question from the chat room. A wellness coach who I know who's in there is asking, quote, we dance with the projections of our mind. Can I quote this? I assume that if someone hears something that you say in the interview and want to quote you,
happily.
Okay. Is that true?
Of course. Of course.
And I know you are having an influence on people who are sitting in the chat. I always appreciate the people out there. They tend to just mostly they're quiet, just quietly listening. We have lunch hour listeners at this hour, and then, of course, we have people who listen to the podcast and in the archive later. And I always feel like, since there is no real concept of time, I feel them with us, too. I always feel like whoever's listening to this show, even if it's 5 years later, if it's still available then, they're with us. And you know, I do want to thank you for being here and
my
give
pleasure.
You the opportunity to, you know, maybe put out some final thoughts, anything more that you'd like to say.
No.
I think we've said it all.
No final
we?
Thoughts. No final thoughts.
Yeah, I'm about as raw and authentic as I get right at this moment because, you know, that's what transition did for me. I mean, it was, and you know, I'll say one more thing just to complete the thought, is when I saw my father go, and I did see him go, it was like a spirit being poured out of a vessel. I could see it. It was a gradual, I didn't have fireworks. It wasn't like I saw, I know some people see like this light coming up. You know, it wasn't like that. I didn't need to see that. I could just look at his eyes. And it was like being poured out of a vessel. And boy, it really hit me that it's just a vessel. You know, when I saw the body, not that we shouldn't take care of ourselves and not that I didn't respect that this was my dad, who he had been in this physical form, suddenly it couldn't have become more clear to me that, wow, this is just a temporary state. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did something that I know many of us think not to do, and I did it kind of logically. I actually blew him a kiss over my head and waved. I didn't see him. I knew he was there, though, because I've heard too many things where you're looking down, and everybody else was focused on where he had been, and I felt like, you know what, I have a feeling he's still very conscious as he was, not yet totally back to all that is, and is looking at us. And so without the nurses turning me in or something, you know, without being, if I could have, I would have really gone over the top and just waved, you know, but I just kind of quietly did and acknowledged him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really felt it, and I feel like, you know, whatever our path, we're all going to get to that moment, and it did really give me peace. So, and anyway, Robert, I'm rambling on about that again, but I do want to thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you.
And tell people again that if you want to read more about Robert's work, go to AuthenticityAccelerator.com.
Yes.
And we will be with you on your journey, Robert. I know that I will be watching and supporting you.
Thank you.
Wherever you go.
Thank you, Susan.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being
here. My pleasure.
Here
thank you
today.
For inviting me. Bye-bye for
yes.
now.
Yes. Thank you. Bye. Okay. Just wrapping up the show. And I just wanted to let everyone know that we're relaunching the show after it's been on hiatus for a little while. And I will be airing shows every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific. And eventually we'll be going back to occasionally having a Saturday night show. Gosh, I can't even talk anymore. That was a powerful experience, just relaying it. I'm losing my voice. But in any case, if you want to learn more about the Frontier Beyond Fear, you can go to the website, frontierbeyondfear.com, where you can also listen to the past shows. The podcasts are also accessible there on Blog Talk Radio. And I do look forward to bringing a diversity of guests on in 2012. And I truly do feel very supported by a lot of people in the spiritual community who just synchronistically keep coming my way. And I know that we are all benefiting from the wisdom and the journeys of the people who have been coming on the show lately. And I really look forward to what the rest of the year will bring. So with that said, I want to thank everyone out there for being with us today. I hope that you can find peace in your life. And, you know, I find myself very much struck by what Robert had to say about living with that, oh, wow, in the current moment. We don't need to wait to see what's on the other side. We can begin to live that way right now. And that, for me, was a powerful message that he shared with us today, in addition to all the other things he had to say. So with that said, thank you again for being here. And I will see many of you again next week at 11 a.m. Pacific.